welcome to Food Stories. I'm Barb Sheldon, and it is spring, it is March, and things are starting to grow and get very exciting around these parts. I had a little break. Thank you for some space and time while I adjusted to the new season and actually to moving into a new house with lots of room for a garden. I've been thinking a lot about gardens lately, and I've been thinking about growing things. And I thought that we would spend the next month learning about the practice of regenerative agriculture. For those of you who don't know what regenerative agriculture is, it's essentially farming and ranching in harmony with nature, leaving things better than you found it, hopefully contributing to the improvement of our climate and our environment. And so I thought there's no better person to discuss this with than the absolute expert in the field, Dr. Chris Nichols. Dr. Nichols is the lead soil scientist with the Food Water Wellness Foundation. She is also the lead soil scientist for the Regenerative Alberta Living Lab Project. And for those of you who have never heard of Regen Alberta Living Lab, their mission is to create an innovation project supported by research that will enable an accelerated response to climate change through the rapid and widespread adoption of new agricultural practices and technologies. Dr. Nichols founded KRIS, Knowledge for Regeneration and Innovation in Soils Systems, and was a senior science advisor with the Canadian Organic Growers, the chief scientist at Rodale Institute, and a research soil microbiologist with the USDA Agricultural Research Service. Chris was an advisor to the Real Organic Project, Savory Institute's Ecological Outcome Verification Program, McCain's Farms of the Future, and Health First. She has a Bachelor of Science degree in Plant Biology and Genetics and Cell Biology, a Master's degree in Environmental Microbiology, and a PhD in Soil Science. Chris has given over 300 invited presentations throughout the world, authored or co-authored more than 30 peer-reviewed publications, been cited or interviewed for more than 100 magazine or newspaper articles and multiple books, numerous videos online, and 2 documentaries. So this is the person that we want to talk about regenerative agriculture with. I welcome Dr. Chris Nichols to our kitchen table. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Barb. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, it's really nice to talk to you. Thank you so much for being here. I've wanted to have you here for a long time because on Food Stories, I haven't yet really sort of talked about another love that I have in another part of my life, which is regenerative agriculture. And you are the ultimate best person to talk to. And I'm really excited to hear your food story. So, yeah. So I thought we could just start there. If I just say, what's your food story, Chris Nichols? Maybe you could just start talking. How does that sound?
That sounds fantastic. Okay. And I appreciate you trying to bridge your worlds that really are interconnected between regenerative agriculture and food. And really, you know, at the heart of what it is that we're trying to do to be able to produce healthy food. Mm-hmm. So my food story, kind of to get to the point of the food story, I have been in Canada for 3 years now. I moved up to Canada to be working with farmers and ranchers in the Regenerative Alberta Living Labs. And as a part of that program, we have over 120 farmers and ranchers that we are working with and that I get to go around the province and talk to and learn from. And one of the things that has happened recently to me is that in the process, I have gotten some meat and other products from Green Mercantile, which is a on-farm store that Shipville Feeders has in Taber, Alberta. And so I come from a farming background, so I'm very much a meat and potatoes type of person. My spouse and I argue frequently as to what is a vegetable. And we can go off on that tangent if you want, but you know, many of the things that we refer to as vegetables are technically fruits. I'm a research scientist, so this is where our arguments lie as to what part of the plant are we talking about that is a vegetable. So what is really a vegetable? But the point with it is that I got some products from Green Mercantile, including some steaks. And I have to tell you that it is the best beef that I've ever had. On moving to Alberta, it gave me access to a lot of different types of meat. And so honestly, even coming from a meat and potatoes background, I was trying to eat more bison and yak and elk that I was getting at farm stores and at community natural stores and other stores like that. And so I wasn't eating very much beef and wanted to go back to having some beef. And so I got some steaks from Shipville Feeders. And again, you know, I've been privileged to be able to live in some major cities and visit some major cities in the US and Canada. And because I come from a meat and potatoes background, have oftentimes gone to a steakhouse. And, you know, so I've been to some of the best steakhouses in some of the major cities. I currently live in Calgary, been to steakhouses in Philadelphia and Washington, D.C. and Minneapolis and Arizona, Phoenix, Arizona, and L.A. and other places like that. And, you know, this is the best meat. And so I actually ended up posting on Instagram at the Shipville Feeders Instagram site and said, you know, that they have basically broken me. I can't get meat. I can't get steak at a restaurant anymore. I can't order steak at a restaurant anymore because I can't have something that's not Shipville Feeders that I am grilling on my grill at home. So this has just really become kind of my thing to be having this as my go-to beef that I have. And you can taste the care and the work that Andrea at Shipville Feeders and her team put into managing those animals and the care that they have in making sure that they are doing some of the best practices to help to regenerate their soils and to produce a very high quality product. So, and in fact, I was at a conference and had dinner with Andrea. We were in Saskatoon, staying at a hotel that had a chop restaurant in the hotel. And so we were getting dinner at that restaurant and she got a steak there and I, you know, didn't get a steak and I told her that I can't do it anymore because she has absolutely broken me. So, I have been broken by having high quality, delicious, farm raised, grass raised, beef. It's wonderful.
That's great. And it's exciting to know that as you're sort of getting used to living in Canada and moving around the province, as you do, because you do travel a lot around the province, visiting different farms and things, that you're able to experience. We are so lucky here. And, you know, Alberta producers have broken me too, because there's just nothing better. And there's so many good ones. And actually, Andrea from Shipwheel is our next guest in a couple of weeks. So for those of you who are interested in Regen Ag, we're spending the month actually talking about it. So Chris, what do you think? So it's really interesting to me that you start your food story off with talking about how food has, you know, really good food has broken you. Essentially, but now you're used to the best. And as a, like, without getting too sciencey for my, you know, my cozy listeners at home, but as a soil scientist, what do you think it is about Alberta? And, you know, without, like, listen, nobody's, you know, we're not promoting Alberta on purpose here. It's just that this is where we live and there is something to it. What do you think it is for the general public? What would you say from a soil standpoint?
I originally come from the U.S. Obviously, I said I've been in Canada for about 3 years. So I come from the U.S. and from a farming background. And from what we've done with animals in the past, in the U.S. in particular, feeding them grains and how those grains in corn has been, you know, the biggest grain that has been fed to cattle, and how corn is processed. I'm a soil microbiologist by training, but I'm always interested in actually why things on a microbial level work the way they do in the soil and how that relates to some of the things in what's happening in the guts of animals, in humans in particular, but also looking at the rumen. And although the organisms are not always the same in the soil or in the rumen or in the human gut, there are similarities in the different types of biochemical reactions that they're performing, similarities in the way that they're processing the grains. And so as we're looking at what it is that we're feeding animals, it does really change the quality, not just of the fats, which is something that we've seen a lot of, but it also changes a lot of the nuanced quality, I think, within the different flavor molecules that are being produced, because a lot of those flavor molecules have various micronutrients that are part of their chemical structure. And that really does change the way in which the food tastes and even the way in which the food smells. A lot of those compounds, again, on a chemical level, are more complex, and their complexity comes from some of these micronutrients. And again, a lot of those different flavor molecules are also produced by the plants in response to various types of stressors. Many of the things that we talk about as far as antioxidants and polyphenolics and good fatty acids are actually stress biomolecules in the organisms that are producing them. And they're helping to protect those organisms from various types of stressors. And again, going back to Alberta, I think that this is an important key to Alberta because it is a very dynamic growing environment. And so there are a lot of stressors on the plants, and what the farmers and ranchers have done in Alberta is, instead of trying to control for all of that by introducing a lot of inputs into the system, they're actually looking at how they can help to respond best to those stressors and design their systems to be able to respond to those stressors. And again, when you don't allow the stressors to happen, the plants, the forages, and the grains that are being produced don't always have enough of concentration of those stress biomolecules that then are utilized by the gut microbiome in humans, but also by the rumen microbiome in cattle, to be able to produce those molecules that then add for the flavor and the texture and the taste that make the products that are produced, the beef that's produced in Alberta, so good.
So delicious. That's yes. That was a pretty sciencey, but not too sciencey yeah. explanation. And I think it's fascinating. I mean, one thing that I think must be really great about your job is part of it for the Regenerative Alberta Living Lab is you get to travel all over the province and you see these incredibly intelligent, amazing farmers and ranchers and these practices that they're putting into place to make this happen. And in a world where there's so much, you know, climate doom and gloom in the news, do you see the positive side of what's happening here within this program? Do you see the good things that the farmers and ranchers are doing? And what have you seen?
Oh, I definitely see the good side, and I definitely think that there is I believe, well, and I should say I know agriculture is the solution to climate change. There are many things that we are attempting to do, collecting CO2 and burying it deep underground, all of these different types of programs that we're trying to do. And it's not to say that those things won't work. I actually yesterday was honored to be able to give a webinar for farmers in the Ukraine at a conservation ag conference that they were
Wow.
hosting. And at the end of that conference, and yes, I was very honored by it. And it was an interesting conversation I was having with my spouse around this because, we're thinking about Ukraine and a country at war, but there's still a country that has to produce food. And the Ukraine has been a breadbasket for the world for centuries. And so, being able to be a place that has all of those issues going on, but still the farmers looking for information. And anyway, at the end, after I had given my talk, several of the questions were surrounding this issue about talking about climate change and carbon markets, because again, even though they're a country at war, they're part of the global environment, and they still see that they're going to potentially need to look at how they're going to be addressing those programs.
Sure.
And geopolitically, as they are trying to integrate more with the European Union, as well as potentially integrating more with NATO, that's going to put pressures on them to also work within some of these global programs that are existing, and climate change being a major one. And so we were discussing the whole idea of agriculture as a solution to climate change. And we were talking about some of these other practices that are being used. There's interest in applying things like basalt and applying biochar and other things to help to absorb more CO2 in the soil. And yes, those things will work, but there are various issues as to what other things are they going to be able to provide. Are they going to really provide for assistance in nutrient and water cycling at a level that's actually going to help us to maintain and even increase our productivity, and producing not just producing food, but producing high quality nutrient dense food? And that's where I am really excited about the Regenerative Alberta Living Lab, because the innovations that these farmers and ranchers are putting into place, and the education that I am getting by being able to travel around the province and talk with these producers, I'm really learning a lot about how all of these things are interconnected in such a way that is really going to be able to address the issues that we're looking for being able to address. Again, being able to produce abundant, high quality, nutrient dense food. And these things that we're trying to do to address climate change, again, it's not to say that they're not going to work, but does that actually contribute enough to addressing our fundamental issues between life and lifelessness on this planet for human beings? Climate change is definitely a significant issue, but the bottom line is we can't live without food. And if we're not able to produce food, and to produce food that is keeping us healthy, what's the point of it all, I guess, in the end? Yeah. What are we doing? Why are we existing as organisms?
You know, it's funny because inevitably on this show, there's always a little doom and gloom talk, because there's a lot of concern around food right now from a variety mm-hmm. of different standpoints. But it's always nice to hear the positive side of things. And nobody has their feet more in the soil than you. Like, I watched you stand in a mud pit for 3 hours one day in your bare feet. And, you know, like, you're really truly from the ground up seeing the positive change and experience of these, like I said, incredibly intelligent, amazing people that are doing such cool things in our province. And so, yes, agreed. And it is so nice to know that there's good people out there doing really good work as well, you know. You might have answered this at the start of the podcast, but what food can't you live without, you personally? And it's okay if you say steak.
I would say that yes. I am very much a meat and potatoes person. Steak is one of those things that I can't live without. I would also say, on the other side of things, that chocolate is the other thing that I can't live without.
That's interesting because in the news just yesterday, there was a concern that chocolate price is increasing right now because of climate change, right?
Yes.
So, you know, it just shows that it's touching every aspect of our lives. We all need chocolate. I think that's a fair statement.
It is. And we do that for things like tea and coffee and wine and other feedstocks for alcohol. How hops are produced and where they're produced, and, you know, the different profiles within the hops change the flavors of beer. All of these things are, to me, again, I find it so funny, because as a microbiologist and a soil scientist, we've connected these things to soil, but the food that we eat, the real food we're eating, we don't think about how it's being grown and where it's being grown. And the animals that we're eating and what we're feeding them.
And the plants. Like, I remember years ago, I used to take my students on farm tours, and we used to go to Lund's organic farm, and now he's retired. He was just outside of Innisfail, but he's the one that had the carrots. I don't know if you ever got to have his carrots, and people would try his carrots and they would say, oh, that's what carrots used to taste like. Mm-hmm. You know, and we know the difference between a bag of mini carrots and that. Everybody knows that flavor of those, like, little, whatever those manufactured, washed in bleach, you know, those versus an organic on farm or on garden carrot. And you go, oh, that's how it tasted when I was a kid. And that just shows that there's been such a change in the dynamics of the soil. Yeah.
Such a change in the dynamics in the soil. And again, a lot of it is not just the soil itself, but it is what the farmers and ranchers are doing. And I think that that's really, going back to the Regenerative Alberta Living Lab, I think that's really what it is that we are honing in on, is this connection between how things are being grown. And again, that how things are being grown changes how the plants respond to their environment. And so the production of those antioxidants and polyphenolics and other complex biomolecules, because we have been looking at just growing for the highest level of productivity, what ends up happening is the plants, when you are kind of bred or pre-programmed to just produce in abundance, you only have so much energy and so much resources. And so in doing that, you put into what it is that you're producing what you have in abundance. And the plants, what they have in abundance is carbohydrates. before they are, that's what's made by photosynthesis, and before they are converted, it takes energy and additional inputs to convert those carbohydrates into something else, those sugars into something else. But if you're programmed to just produce at a high level, you're going to take the simplest and easiest thing that you have in abundance to put into that food. And that is not just the soils, but how it is that we're managing the plants and the animals, I
And the
think is
water.
really changing. Yes, it is changing what our food is and what our food tastes like. And again, how healthy our food is for us and what the microbiome. So again, going back to that connection with the microbiome,
Yes.
the soil microbiome and the gut and rumen microbiome have similarities in the way in which they manage simple carbon compounds, carbohydrates, and sugars, but also then what they use those compounds, the different biomolecules that they're producing. There are certain amino acids that only come from microorganisms. And the only ways to get them into our food is through the microorganisms, getting that into the plants and from the plants into the animals. The same thing is true for some of the antioxidants. There's an antioxidant called ergothionine that is supposed to be very beneficial for age-related diseases and anti-inflammatory diseases. And that is produced by microorganisms that are in the soil, primarily by fungi. And that's how that gets into our food. And if we're not growing our food so that those things can, in a way, in ways in which those organisms are flourishing in the soil and those compounds they're making are getting into our food, we're not going to be able to have all of the things that we need to get out of our food. And our food stories in the end are going to be very short and very unsatisfying.
That's, gosh, we could talk about this for ages and have everyone out there listening, this is your Regen Ag primer. Now that you're interested, Dr. Chris is going to tell you where you can find more information about regenerative agriculture. Obviously, starting with the Regenerative Alberta Living Lab website is a really great resource. Where else would you recommend, just the average person who wants to learn more about this and start to do a deeper dive, where could they go to get more information?
I think there are some really good resources that are out there. In Alberta, we've got some great resources through the ARAs. ARAs are the Applied Research Associations, and they have websites and they have videos on there talking with producers, information that's there. There are other farmer groups, both in the US and Canada, that have links to various types of resources and things we can learn on the University of YouTube. I know there's a lot of things we need to filter through. The internet is a great source for information and education, but it also is one of those things that we need to be very cognizant of what it is that we're getting as far as
It's so true.
information. And
Always.
I love looking at, again, these producer organizations and the information that they have there. I also, when I'm sharing on social media, I like to make sure that a lot of this information is linked to a research study, and that it isn't just, sort of opinions that are out there. I know that research is behind in knowledge and information, but at least that you would have some of that linkage that would be there. I also, if you're looking for various types of books that are out there, I think there are some really good resources that are published by Chelsea Green has a good publishing group, and Acres is a good publishing group as far as being able to provide some different types of books that are out there. There are a series of four books that have been written by Dr. David Montgomery on connecting soil and soil microbiology to food and human health.
Amazing. What about documentaries? Do you have anything that way that you would recommend?
I think that there are some good documentaries that are out there. You know, every documentary has different nuances to it and different audiences that it's playing towards. I was honored to be involved in the documentary Kiss the Ground. And there is a new documentary from the same producers that is called Common Ground. I know that the National Farmers Union here in Canada has produced a documentary that I'm interested. I haven't seen it yet, but that is being shown here in Alberta and in Canada. And so I think, again, there are some good documentaries and good information that's out there. Like with everything, I guess my biggest recommendation for everyone is always to educate and push yourself to always ask why. Yes. That's been the biggest education, the best education I've ever had in my life. I've been able to go to some world-class universities, but the best education I've ever had in my life was when producers, I was on their farms or ranches, and they were asking me why these things were happening. And I would have been driven by wanting to figure out why this stuff works. So
yeah.
Never just accept things. Just constantly be pushing and asking questions.
And asking and being discerning and connecting to research. And I agree with you on all the resources that are out there that are available to all of us now, because it's the information age. We really have to do our due diligence and ask that why. I love that. That's beautifully put. Fantastic advice. Dr. Chris, thank you so much. We could go another hour, but instead we'll get people asking why. And I really appreciate you talking to us about soil and food and health and telling your story. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.